Here's a drive to deep left field. Bradley back, jumps, and it is gone. The first home run for the Toronto Blue Jays this season comes off the bat of Bo Bichette to make it a 9-5 game.
Hey, what's going on? It's At the Letters for Tuesday, April 4th. Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith. Thanks as always to our producers, Christian Ryan on the audio side and Nick Andrad on the video side. And Ben, we are both in Kansas City and we both were at Kauffman Stadium on Monday night to witness the Toronto Blue Jays' third loss of the year as they dropped to 1-3 thanks to the Achilles heel of this team that we all identified in spring training, starting pitching.
Yeah, exactly. Line up five former All-Stars in your starting rotation and then just watch it crumble. It has been pretty rough to start this season for the Blue Jays with their rotation. It really has. And, you know, I think there's probably some room to dive into Bassett, to dive into Berríos. We're about to see Yusei Kikuchi, the stopper, pitch for the Jays on Tuesday here. Right. So we'll see how that unfolds. With Manoa, I don't know. Like, to me, I don't have a lot to say about Manoa. I think his stuff actually looked really good in the opener. And I think of all the pitchers in this rotation, he and Kevin Gausman obviously deserve the most leeway. But I do have a lot to say about Berríos and Bassett.
Well, let's start with Berríos because we just watched it on Monday night. Like you said, we haven't seen Yusei Kikuchi's results yet. We're recording this on Tuesday before game two of the Royals series. So as you're listening to this, you will know whether Yusei Kikuchi is all of a sudden like Cy Young Robbie Ray or still an unmitigated disaster or somewhere in between. Ben and I are completely ignorant of that. And I think, Ben, you probably share my opinion in that I do not know what to expect from him in this outing. So we'll kind of put that aside and talk about Jose Berríos on Monday, trying to start 2023 on a better foot. Results looked a lot like 2022.
Oh yeah, they sure did. I mean, looking at the numbers for this start, it was 8 runs, 9 hits, and 10 batted balls of 100 miles an hour or more. And that is just not a combination you ever want to see for a pitcher on your team. And, you know, looking back at some of the footage from this game, because I was kind of intrigued, like, was he tipping? He does a lot of stomping on the mound. You know, what's going on there? And couldn't see anything on that front. But I did notice that the Royals were capitalizing on the pitches he left over the plate, and there were a lot of those, especially to lefties, and there are a lot of those against Berríos, who struggled against lefties last year and is going to continue to see a lot of lefties. So if you're making mistakes over the plate to lefties, that's going to be problematic. But even some of the good pitches that he was making, you know, breaking balls below the zone, they were hitting those. Vinny Pasquantino with a double down the line on a pitch that was pretty good pitch, you know, 10 inches off the ground. He goes down and gets it. So it's a bad combination. And honestly, it's not what you expect from the Royals, right? Like, this is a bad offense, a winless team, last place team last year in a big park with a good outfield defense behind you. If there's ever a time to have Jose Berríos bounce back, this should have been it.
Royals with a pair of 3-run innings.
Yeah, there was a couple, and I think of Bobby Witt as well, where it was like, all right, good piece of hitting, right? And what, not a lot Jose Berríos can do about that. But there was also a couple, as you indicated, where I said, oh, hey, there's the four-seam fastball to a lefty in a bad spot. And there's also the front hip two-seamer to a lefty that Berríos is trying to land, and he is just not getting it front hip enough, like just not getting it onto the inside part of the plate enough, and it's bleeding out over the heart where big league hitters are going to do damage against it. It just seems like Berríos is working with such thin margins right now with his fastball command. When he's to the edges, he's totally effective at the big league level, and like the approach against lefties, which to your point Berríos is going to see a ton of this year, is front hip two seamers extension side and four seam fastballs away, kind of, you know, off to, you know, away from those left-handed hitters. And you can see it in the pitch chart. That's what Berríos is trying to execute. It was just every time that one of those pitches bled over the heart of the plate, he really paid for it. And that's how last year lefties against Berríos' four-seam fastball slugged 752 like Barry Bonds in his prime numbers, because too many of those four seamers were just left in really bad spots. And it was 21 extra base hits off of it by lefties. And I think like 10 homers and pull up the heat map. And it's just like a big red dot right over the heart of the plate. So it, to me, it really does just come down to that fastball command and locating to the edges. Because as we saw in some of those innings that Barrios had on Monday night, when he's doing that, he's still effective.
Yeah, he still can be effective, but it's still one of those starts where you see, and the changeup too, which should be a weapon against lefties and has been historically a really good pitch for Barrios. If he's leaving the changeup up, then he's really got to locate his fastball because hitters are going to be sitting on it if he can't locate his changeup, and it just sort of spirals. And we did see that. So I don't know. You know, the stuff is kind of where you'd expect it to be. It's not like it's not moving. There were moments where he would locate it well, 92 to 95, which is what you expect. But big picture, this is continuing to be a concern. And I don't think, you know, I don't want to be overly dramatic and say that this is like, you know, crisis mode or anything like that. Don't even really want to think about 2028, which is the last year of that contract. I mean, this is clearly, at this point, that contract doesn't look good for the Jays. I mean, that's stating the obvious right now. But more to the point, the 2023 team needs to figure out what to do. And Barrios is a big part of this 2023 team and still can be an effective part of this team. You know, once he kind of has the chance to look at the video of Pete Walker and the Blue Jays pitching people in anticipation of his next start against the Angels, there's still stuff to work with here. There's still building blocks that you can try to tinker with. But I mean, I don't know. What's your level of concern here with Barrios, Arden?
2028, that's my level of concern. Is that a real year? Are we going to live to 2028? What? That sounds like fantastical and made up to me. But yeah, look, it's a 7-year deal at $131 million. And the way that Jose Barrios has been performing to this point, there's no reason to expect he's going to take the opt-out that he has in there unless things change in a very dramatic way. And you kind of have to like pull out from a Blue Jays lens, and where you know, as close as we are to the team and even just fans who watch the Blue Jays all the time, they see the reason to believe that Jose Barrios can recapture what allowed him to be like a 3.74 ERA guy over the half decade prior to arriving in Toronto, or prior to the 2022 season, at least. I mean, one of the most consistent and effective and durable starters in baseball, like not ace level Scherzer, DeGrom type of thing, Verlander, whoever, but one of the better number twos across the league. Like, that's why he got that extension that he did. So you see those reasons why when you're as close to it as you are. But then, like, if you just kind of shift your perspective and you think, well, say like the Blue Jays had this developed starter who had been like really remarkably consistent and durable over a half decade, and they traded him when he was like a year and a half from free agency and got a couple prospects for him, and then you watched him with that other team that the Blue Jays had traded him to go out and have like a 5.5 ERA over a really large sample since you had traded him. Like, we're now talking about 40 to 50 starts since, and everyone would be applauding the Blue Jays front office and saying, wow, like, what a great move getting off of him when you did. Like, what great foresight, like, way to make a move that would be unpopular in the moment, trading that guy, homegrown and as good as he had been at his age too. Super unpopular move when you make it, and then being proven right over time by seeing the way that the results turn. Blue Jays fans would be saying, wow, remarkable that this front office turned him into a couple of prospects at the perfect time.
And I still think, looking back at the trade, nothing wrong with that trade. I mean, in 2021, that was a big splash. It was seen as a very aggressive move at the time. They part with Austin Martin, Simeon Woods Richardson. You know, again, that was a team that needed pitching and certainly benefited from Barrios in 2021. Even further, you look at what those guys are doing, Martin and Woods Richardson. I don't think you're missing those guys too much at this point. And look, the extension made sense to me at the time. I certainly thought it was a good move at the time. But, you know, I'm a podcaster, right? Like, I don't have the same resources or responsibilities or any of those things that the Blue Jays have. It's, you know, it's a totally different game. They are the ones tasked with making the decision as to whether that's a good call. And they decided it was a good call. Right now, it's not looking like one, but there's a lot of time until 2028 for Barrios to turn that around or take it in totally different directions. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, it should be said that like Austin Martin's prospect stock has plummeted since the Blue Jays traded him. So, you know, to be fair to the Blue Jays, they also traded Austin Martin at, it seems like, the perfect time. Yep. And Simeon Woods Richardson, like, we'll see, right? Made his Twins debut at the end of 2022. He's starting this year in the minors, but like the numbers at the high minors have been pretty good in AAA. So we'll see what he becomes. Martin, actually, I think is hurt. I think he had a UCL thing in spring. So he's not even playing right now. So we'll see what the numbers look like when he returns and what the power looks like and when he makes his big league debut and where he fits defensively. Like, there's so many question marks with him. So it's too early to evaluate this trade like in totality and sit back and say like this side won, or, you know, this is a good trade for the Twins or a good trade for the Jays. It could also be a good trade for both. It could also be a bad trade for both. You see a lot of trades that end up being bad trades for both sides where nobody wins. We always think it's this binary thing where there's a winner and a loser in each trade. There's a ton of trades that are just like nobody won this. Like, none of these players really ended up being exceptional after they were traded. So we'll see. But I mean, the early returns, there is no arguing with.
Yeah, and I think my last sort of take on Berríos at this point is basically, you look at him right now, he's clearly an intriguing major league pitcher with all kinds of skills and athleticism and good pitches and experience, and every team in baseball would want José Berríos on their staff. Let's not lose sight of that. This is a major league pitcher, major league starting pitcher. This is someone that can help a good major league team win. So 30 for 30 would want him. I think also 0 for 30 would want him through 2028 on a $131 million deal. So that's the spot the Blue Jays are in.
Yeah, you got to hope that some of that money gets back above water, because now it's looking to be beneath sea level, just considering the early returns. But yeah, like you said, still, you know, relatively young Berríos is, like, a lot of time left in this game, and a lot of different things can happen. Baseball can change on a dime. Like, if we were having this conversation and the Blue Jays trade for José Berríos, it would be, holy smokes, pen this guy in, permanent marker him in for 30 starts of like a 3.7 ERA, because that's all that he's done for half a decade. Chris Bassett, at a very different point in his career, a mid-30s guy, and, you know, Blue Jays are in the Chris Bassett business for the next 3 years at, $62 million over three, maybe $63 million. Also had, like, a blow-up outing the other night against the St. Louis Cardinals, who were a really good lineup, and I think you found that out the hard way. How much of that was the Cardinals being good? How much of that was Chris Bassett not being himself?
Well, the Cardinals are really good. And if you have Brendan Donovan coming out and actually flashing a lot of power, like, you've got Tommy Edman hitting ninth, this is a really good lineup. At the same time, Chris Bassett is supposed to be a really good pitcher who can handle these lineups, and historically he has been that. So you would definitely expect a better result than what Bassett showed. And, you know, it's a long season. This, you know, four games in, right? As we record this, the Jays are just a fraction of the way through their schedule. And of course, every team in baseball is going to have four game stretches where they look bad. Every pitcher is entitled to a bad start. That's worth saying. The Phillies are 0-4 as we record this. The Mariners are like 1-4. There are a lot of good teams out there that are off to a bad start. And I don't think anyone in Toronto is totally reassessing whether the Mariners or the Phillies are a good team, nor are people in Seattle looking at the Jays and thinking that they are, you know, doomed to fail. It's so early. But with Bassett, the one thing that I do point to is, you know, early in spring when he was pitching with diminished velocity, who cares? It's spring. But it counts now, and he's down more than a mile per hour. Not a huge drop-off, but every mile per hour counts, and it's not good. You don't want to see that. So that's something to watch carefully. Again, not time to panic, but I guarantee behind closed doors, the Jays are aware of that. Guarantee they don't like that trend line. And so, you know, as we observe and kind of track this storyline, that's something to watch.
Absolutely. Chris Bassett hit 93 twice in that outing. Like, that's where he topped out. You give him a third if you want to round up the 92.6 on a four-seamer that he threw Goldschmidt. But so give him that one. That's three pitches at 93. Everything else was diminished. The sinker averaged 91. The four-seamer averaged 92. I mean, this is just well below where Chris Bassett has pitched in the past. And during spring, I think you take a guy like Chris Bassett, who is very meticulous and very fastidious and knows exactly what he's doing at his word when he says, look, I'm building up slowly in spring training. I'm pitching purposefully with diminished velocity. I've done this like, I don't know, 15, 16 times before as a professional. I know how to get myself ready for a big league season. I'm not trying to light up the radar gun here in Florida in March. I'm trying to haul innings through summer, and I'm trying to be available to be on a postseason mound in October. So you take him at his word at that point. And you even give him like a mulligan the first start of the year. It's cold in St. Louis. It's his first time out. He's like working with all kinds of new stuff and variables. And you can look back at first starts of the year for Bassett in prior years, velocity diminished as well. But going forward, you're going to want to see that velocity coming back, and you're going to want to see Chris Bassett throwing harder. And I don't know if it's down again in start two. I don't know if like you need to panic. Maybe the concern turns up a little bit, but as he gets into his season here, second, third, fourth, fifth outing of the year, you want to see that velocity coming back, not only because like that's a sign you want to see from the starting pitcher, but also because it appears, as we saw against the Cardinals, that he needs it to be effective if he's going to be executing in the parts of the zone that he was against St. Louis.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Chris Bassett, I think it's safe to describe him as a pitcher's pitcher, as a finesse pitcher in a lot of ways. Same thing you can say about a lot of guys in the league, like a Johnny Cueto or a Zach Greinke. He's a real pitcher. Now, the thing with those guys is, and it's going to be fun, we're actually going to see Greinke tomorrow. Greinke against Manoah should be a great matchup.
Can't wait.
Yeah, it's an awesome, awesome matchup. But the thing with Greinke is when he threw 96, when he was sitting 95, he was a lot better. Like, that's when he was winning the Cy Young. He's still an effective major league pitcher now. He might go 7 shutout against the Blue Jays. But I guarantee if you ask Zach Greinke, he would prefer to be able to touch 100. He would prefer to be able to sit 95, 96 the way he did when he was 23, 24 years old. So it's the same thing for all these pitchers. The more velocity you have, the more room for error you have. And if Chris Bassett loses a mile per hour, I have no doubt that he can still be an effective major league pitcher. I've seen the Zips projections. I know I've seen the, you know, Fangraphs article. He's a bust candidate, all this stuff. Yeah, that's the nature of pitching. They're all kind of bust candidates at a certain point, and that applies to Chris Bassett. I still think he's lined up to have a good year, but I'd be a lot more confident saying that if he's sitting 93 as opposed to sitting, you know, 91.8.
Yeah, I just think that it was the velocity in that outing, and it was the execution, honestly. I think when Chris Bassett looks back at it, he won't love some of the locations they left pitches in. And credit to the Cardinals as well for like having a really good game plan against him. They were super aggressive. Like, they were ambushing Bassett right from the jump, right? I mean, two of his first three pitches were hit over the walls. So a really good lineup with a really good game plan against a pitcher with somewhat diminished stuff who wasn't executing as finely as he'd like to. Yeah, this level, the big leagues, that's how you end up with an outing where there's super crooked numbers being put up on the board. The thing about Chris Bassett, like, this is a guy who his entire career has been making adjustments, has been kind of reinventing himself and changing what he does on the mound and reaching deep into that repertoire. So it's going to be an early test of that and his ability to adjust between outings. I'm really fascinated to see what he looks like his next time out, and how he's pitching and how things go. One thing that I think you'll continue to see is him calling his own game on the mound. And that's another thing that I don't think is an issue, and I don't think was behind this. I kind of think that people forget that pitchers have always called their own games. Chris Bassett in particular, but like through the entire history of the sport, pitchers are calling their own games because it's their say. They can shake off what the catcher recommends. This isn't like NCAA baseball where you're getting signs coming in from the dugout. The catcher makes like a recommendation essentially. And yes, there are some pitchers who just follow what their catchers put down. I remember, I think Marco Estrada was like that.
Mark Burley.
But there are far more pitchers. Yeah, Mark Burley was like that. There are far more pitchers who will shake off and go to another pitch. Look at Chris Bassett last year. This guy was renowned for shaking and shaking and shaking. Like, he was one of the slowest workers in baseball in 22 because he shook so often. Even beyond that, like, pitchers prior to PitchCom technology had like physical cues that they would show to their catcher. I've talked to pitchers about this, and certain guys, like, if they had their mouth open when they got the return throw, that meant let's go to breaking ball next. Or if they turned their head a certain way, like, that meant, oh, let's go, you know, with the fastball next or something. They had sort of physical cues they would show their catcher just to speed up that process and call their own game from the mound. So I really don't think that the PitchCom is behind Chris Bassett's issues right now. I think that velocity execution execution and the quality of opposition is.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment. And I think, you know, it's going to take some time for him to gain that comfort level with the PitchCom device. And that's true of a lot of pitchers in the game right now. He's on that list. It's not ideal. I assume that with a greater level of comfort, maybe that'll improve his results slightly. But, you know, I'm not going to attribute the, what was it, four home runs? How many home runs?
I don't remember off the top of my head. It was at least three or four
home runs. Yeah. So many, many home runs. Too many home runs. I'm not going to attribute that to PitchCom. Like, at a certain point, you're delivering the pitch. You have to make sure the major league hitters are hitting it into the ground or missing it or popping it up. And Bassett was not able to do that.
The last guy I want to talk about before we take a break is Kevin Gausman and just what you make of the BABIP monster continuing to hound him into his first start of 2023.
Well, you know, it sucks for Kevin Gausman. Not ideal for the Blue Jays. It's kind of like if you spent a year flipping a coin and it came up heads a lot more than tails, you assume it's going to even out the next year. But maybe your first flip of that year comes up heads anyway. And I think that's what happened to Kevin Gausman. What I've seen from this Blue Jays defense is they're better than what we saw in 2022, especially in the outfield. Kiermaier looks good. Springer looks good. Varsho cutting off balls in the corner. These are really good defensive outfielders. That's going to benefit him as they move ahead. So for one day, it didn't help. But I think that moving forward, we're going to see Kevin Gausman get better luck and better results.
Yeah, of the four pitchers that we've seen so far start for the Blue Jays, and none of them really having like the start that they would have liked to, you know, varying degrees. But my concern level is the absolute lowest with Gausman of all of them, based on what we saw. Like, I just, these outings are going to happen for him. It's the nature of his splitter. The Blue Jays learned a lot last year about shifting and defensive deployment behind Gausman. Remember, like, how aggressively they were shifting him early in 2022, and that was part of the Blue Jays' strategy and philosophy in 22, was like, we're gonna really like buy into, you know, our philosophies defensively. And the thing is, you can't just like do that once and then not do it the next time. You have to do it over time. So for the first several Kevin Gausman starts, they shifted aggressively with him. But the nature of the splitter is that it gets like a lot of unexpected contact. It's you know, he gets a lot of mishit balls that end up going places where like your model based on track records might not indicate. And then the other thing with Gausman is that hitters swinging down at that splitter and guarding against that then mishit fastballs up in the zone as well, and those don't go places that you would expect them to either. So I think that for exactly the reason you cited, for the improved defense behind Gausman, that like he's going to have much better numbers this year. And I think that you look at the quality of stuff that he threw in that first outing, getting whiffs with all three pitches, and even like go back to spring training and the quality of stuff that he was throwing there, I have a lot of confidence that Kevin Gausman's going to be really, really good this year, results of his first outing notwithstanding.
Swing and a miss, and Gausman strikes Arenado out. The stranded base runner scoreless at the end of one.
Yeah, the absolute best combination for a pitcher is to have nasty stuff that you can put where you want, and Kevin Gausman has that combination, so he's going to be really good this year.
No kidding. Let's step away, but when we come back, we should talk offense with this club, because while there's been lots of intrigue on the pitching side, the Blue Jays seem to be a very different offensive team through the first four games. So we're going to get into that and so much more, and we continue on At the Letters.
Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith. We are both here in Kansas City covering off the Blue Jays four-game set with the Royals this week. And obviously want to thank our producers as well. Christian Ryan and Nick Entrod, always a heavier lift when Ben and I are on the road. So thanks so much to them. Thanks to you for listening. If you want to email us, it is attheletters@sportsnet.ca. So Ben, I think that we really covered off the pitching concerns pretty thoroughly in the first half. Any offensive concerns, lineup concerns, position player concerns beyond the fact that the Blue Jays just no longer hit home runs?
Yeah, exactly. It took until the very end of Monday's game before they finally hit that home run. Bobichat, the last of the 30 teams to connect for a home run, which is not what I would have guessed. But there you have it. They're going to hit a bunch more. So concern-wise, you know, honestly, not a ton. I think it's a really strong position player group. I think they're in a really good spot. But I'll toss a couple out here and see what you think. You know, the opener, Bobichat looked a little tentative defensively, not what we want to see. With the throw, errant throw, and you know, another one that he was picked up on that wasn't scored an error. So not where the Jays want to see Bobichat beginning this season. It's obviously something that he has faced, you know, some defensive struggles last year as well. I think at the same time, he can be a capable major league shortstop. So is it encouraging to see him start the year this way? No, but I think he can be a capable major league shortstop. I don't see that as a major concern. And the other one I'll toss out there, again, more a reality than a major concern. Certainly not something you're going to really change, but the speed on the bases, Brandon Belt and Alejandro Kirk, this is recency bias for sure, because there were a couple plays on Monday that you see the ball hit into the outfield, you think the runner scores. And then you look down and Alejandro Kirk is pulling into third base, Brandon Belt pulling into third base, because they just don't have a lot of foot speed. And the good thing about those guys is they're on base a lot. And so they're going to be running around the bases a lot, but it's just not a lot of speed. That's not who they are. They're good players in spite of that. And I just happened to notice that on Monday. There were a couple times where you probably would have scored if you had an average runner out there.
I'll build on those a little bit. Some of that is just things that you knew coming in, right? Like, you knew Brandon Belt and Alejandro Kirk weren't going to be really quick coming into the season. So they've just kind of met my expectations. I think when it comes to Bichette at short, you're going to make your errors when you play every day at shortstop at the big league level. Like, that's just something that's going to happen. I think that, and this is based on just the play that I saw from him in spring. We haven't seen a ton of it yet in the regular season, but in spring, I saw some pretty good athleticism from Bo, and ranginess. And just within this new sort of shift restricted world, like, there's a lot more room for Bo to kind of move laterally. And I think that you're going to see him make some impressive plays in that vein. I think the key for him is just, like, it's the gambler's thing, like, not chasing good money with bad. So, like, if you make the rangy play, if you get deep into the hole, if you get to a ball, but you have no shot of getting the runner at first, you just can't throw that ball. Like, you can't let a guy get to second. Just let them be at first. Don't try to make plays. They're just, like, clearly outside of, like, reality, honestly, like plays that just aren't going to be made. So that is just something with the throwing arm that I think that Bo is just gonna have to be, like, cognizant of. If he takes those ones away, I think that that'll just allow him to be, like, a totally fine, competent, average major league shortstop. Like, I don't think that he's going to be world beating defensively. I think that's unrealistic, but I think that, like, if he just doesn't get in his own way too much, he can be perfectly playable as a shortstop. I, to just continue building with Kirk as well, who you mentioned, behind the plate, starting to have some concerns on my end. And I talked about it last week coming into the season about how, like, defensively the Blue Jays at the catching position, I was, like, a little concerned about coming in. And now, just having seen the throwing arm from Alejandro Kirk a little bit, having kind of seen the way that he's sort of receiving and transferring, having seen the increase in stolen base attempts across baseball, and it's something that hasn't really hit the Blue Jays yet to this point, but, like, trust me, it's coming. Like, teams are going to start identifying this and trying to exploit it against the Blue Jays. I do think that controlling the running game is an area where we're going to have to look at Alejandro Kirk a bit closer this year and just kind of see how that's going, because the results so far have not been great. And I would expect the teams are going to start really challenging the Jays in that area a lot more going forward.
So far, 0-for-5 for the Blue Jays when it comes to catching base stealers, base stealing attempts. And if you're an opposing team, especially a team like the Royals, Bobby Witt Jr. can fly. Nicky Lopez moves pretty well out there. So if you're Kansas City, probably not going to outslug the Blue Jays most nights. So that's a perfect example where test those guys, see, make them make a play and put some pressure on them. So I think if you're an opposing pro scout watching the Toronto Blue Jays right now, that would be part of the message. And then it will be on them to respond and to prove to opposing teams that that's not a challenge you want to take. But I think, you know, broadly, just zooming out beyond the Jays, it's great seeing all the stolen base attempts, seeing the new rules, seeing batting average on balls in play go up. Love seeing that. Time of game is down. Certainly saw that in some of the games so far for the Jays, although not all. And so I'm really liking these rules, but it does require players like Kirk to make some more adjustments.
Yeah, because it's like the 80s all over again on the base pass. And we'll see like if this sustains, certainly through the first 4 or 5 days of the season. Like stolen base rates are through the roof. Like you're seeing, you know, over 1.5 attempts per game, close to 1.5 like successful per game. You're seeing the like the success rate being close to 85%. That's a lot. Like that's high. So it's really like imperative on Blue Jays catchers to like kind of be on mind their P's and Q's. I don't know if that's going to be just more back picks. I don't know if that's going to be on the pitchers as well and some of their timing and varying it, really utilizing the full length of the pitch clock in order to like not let runners get really good jumps. Like I do think there is going to be an adjustment to come for the Blue Jays defensively when it comes to just controlling the running game, because as you said, there are going to be teams that are looking at how things have played out to this point and targeting that as an area of weakness.
Yeah, so that's some stuff to build on, but I do have some positives to point to as well for this team in the course of their early games. And to me, it kind of starts with outfield defense, where you look at Kevin Kiermaier anchoring things in center field, and I think that it helps the rest of the outfield play up defensively. What I've seen from George Springer so far is really good. I think he's a plus right fielder. He gets great reads on balls. His arm seems healthier at this point, and he's able to move comfortably out there. Then you have Varsho in left. He's making really good decisions out there, putting his speed and arm to good use.
So second and third as this ball's lifted to left center. Long run, Varsho into deep left center, and he makes a spectacular diving catch. But Dalton Varsho just made a great catch out of deep left center.
I just think overall this outfield unit looks a lot stronger, and that was expected, but probably for the Blue Jays really reassuring to see.
Yeah, and like talk about Dalton Varsho as well. I mean, who's got to be the best like secondary center fielder in the game. Like he's looked great in the outfield. Obviously there was like, you know, kind of weird sun ball at one point there, but yeah, stuff like that happens like on kind of, you know, I just think that, yeah, you're going to see this over time where the Blue Jays outfield defense like really impacts their run prevention in a meaningful way. And we still haven't even seen like the spectacular Kevin Kiermaier catch that is going to be coming our way at some point. Maybe it's at Rogers Center where they've now got that like lowered wall in center field and he can reach up kind of over it. But like Kiermaier is a guy, and he already did it with the sort of first to third on opening day that led to the kind of the game-winning run being scored in that like insane opening day heavyweight clash with the St. Louis Cardinals. Kiermaier is a guy who's going to do like 3 or 4 little things in this month of April like that that are going to he's just going to be instant fan favorite. Like when people see the way that this guy plays, the speed in the outfield, the hits that he takes away, just wait until he like bunts for a double, you know, or wait until he hits like a ground ball to the outfield that is a single for 99 out of 100 big leaguers. And he just, a defender is kind of laying off on it and doesn't aggressively charge it on it. And Kevin Kiermaier at like 30 feet per second rounds first base and turns a single into a double. Just wait until he does stuff like that.
Yeah, I love the hustle double as a play, especially if the player kind of lets up a little bit as he's rounding first base, and then you see the outfielder let up, false sense of security, boom, into second base. I mean, those plays are just electrifying. They're so fun to watch. And yeah, I think we'll see some of those from some of the good base runners on this team. And that kind of brings to mind Kevin Biggio, who I think does look like a pleasant surprise so far. I mean, it's early, but he's getting on base and he's in competition, I guess you could say, with Whit Merrifield and Santiago Espinal at second base. And we're a long way from seeing an end to that competition or seeing a quote unquote resolution to how that situation plays out. But Biggio getting on base, that's a good situation for the Jays. And I think it will lead to more opportunities for him.
All the Blue Jays are getting on base. Like, this team's offensive approach through the first four games has been so, so encouraging from a 1-3 team as well. Like, you think about this, the Blue Jays have been playing from behind essentially all season, and they've had these huge deficits and holes that they've had to climb their way out of. They haven't gone out of their approach in doing that. They haven't just tried to hit five-run homers every time they're at the plate. You look at it like individual to individual in this lineup, and the Blue Jays are being discerning and patient. They are managing the strike zone. Through the first four games, they have the second best chase rate in baseball, like the, and that's so like the second lowest, essentially, you know, like the third lowest swinging strike rate. Their contact rate is the second highest. I mean, they're not expanding, and they're not getting out of their approach. Like, this is something that they talked about all spring long, that they wanted to like produce differently than just with the home run ball, and they wanted to be a bit less all or nothing. And I think that you're seeing that, and some of this, these process indicators like chase rates, swing and strike rate, contact rate, things like that, that's going to start providing dividends. Like, there's going to be a game where the Blue Jays come through with like five homers and just boat race a team. Like, that is coming very soon. It could happen as soon as tonight here on Tuesday, April the 4th, as we record this in the morning, because you couple that as well with what the Blue Jays are doing when they get good pitches to hit and some of the exit velocities that we're seeing. Blue Jays hitters to this point through April, the games April 3rd, they have five of the 20 hardest hit balls across MLB this season. So 25% of a quarter of the 20 hardest hit balls across MLB. And it's not just Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Matt Chapman is up there. Dalton Varsho set a new max exit velo at 112.5 off a lefty. Are you kidding me? I mean, this is really encouraging stuff from a process indicator standpoint. And I think that you're going to start seeing the results follow very soon.
I agree completely. I mean, I think that it's a matter of days before we see, like, maybe by the time people listen to this, they'll have had a big offensive game where they, like you said, they hit a bunch of homers, they score 12 runs, and there's a bit of relief, right? Because this is a starting pitching unit that probably could use a little bit of breathing room, and this offense is very capable of providing that. I think when you look up and down that lineup, we've seen a great approach from Springer. We all know about the power, but he seems to be really content to hit the ball where it's pitched and take a bunch of singles if that's what's coming his way, work a tough at-bat. Bo Bichette continues, we talked about it all spring, continues having good at-bats, making really hard contact. Vladdy Jr., 100-mile-an-hour ball after 100-mile-an-hour ball off of his bat. That's what we expect. Then you got Kirk. He just keeps hitting. You know, it's Chapman is hitting really, really well to start the season. And I agree, you know, you look at it collectively, you look at the overall decisions that they're making, they are not pushing too much, they're not expanding too much, and that's going to lead to a lot of runs for this team. And so I think offensively at this point, when you have a healthy group, you have some depth, it's a great place to be. I think they're well positioned to be a very, very good offensive team as they move ahead.
Yeah, that new Varsho max exit velo, that came off of Miles Michaelis, who's a righty. So I should correct myself there. It wasn't off a lefty. It was off Michaelis. But Varsho's actually looked pretty serviceable against lefties to this point. And like, look, it's early in the season. See how things play out. You got to be very cautious with early season numbers. But maximum exit velocity is something that stabilizes really quickly. And also, if you set a new top end for that, yep, like you can't argue with that. You have demonstrated that you can hit a ball that hard. So we can now say that Dalton Varsho can hit a ball that hard. He's been trying to hit pitches as hard as he possibly can his entire career. So it's very interesting to see that he is now like tapped into some previously unlocked potential. Like, it speaks to the growth that he still has, the room for growth in his game, and how he could continue to find ways to be better. Like, another thing that's been really interesting to me with Varsho is just the pitches per plate appearance. He's seeing 4.7, which is 13th in baseball and third on the Blue Jays. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is seeing more pitches per plate appearance. Brandon Belt is leading baseball in pitches per plate appearance to this point, 5.38 for Belt. But seeing like Varsho up there in the top 15 across baseball, like, very encouraging. Seeing Belt and Varsho in the top 15, I mean, these are new guys to the Blue Jays, guys who have every reason to try to like impress right away and maybe try to do too much. And they are buying into that approach that I was talking about. And this is what Belt's done like his entire career, but interesting to see Varsho up there. And then if you kind of like zoom out even to like the top 20 across baseball, Kirk's in there. Matt Chapman's been well above average, as he generally has been. Like, I just think that the Blue Jays are being very patient and selective and honestly, like, mature in not getting out of what they believe will provide success over time. And it really is only a matter of time before this offense breaks out in a big way.
Yeah, you see them down whatever it was, 7-0 in the Berríos game, but they're still chipping away and they're still finding ways to get on base. And that's the best thing you can do if you're down a lot of runs. I think the base running too is pretty interesting. You mentioned Kiermaier and that aggressive base running. We saw Vladdy steal third base. We saw Vladdy kind of pushing down the third base line with Brandon Belt at the plate, seeing some aggressiveness there from him. That's not a surprise. We've seen that from Vladdy. Kevin Biggio, obviously a base runner who's selectively aggressive and can do some really good things on the bases. So I think that as much as I mentioned Kirk and Belt, and you know they're not going to win a lot of base running awards in their lives, but they do have some players who are really capable of doing some good things on the bases, and that can help this team as well.
Totally. You look at the top sprint speeds that we're seeing to this point, still need a little bit of time for this stuff to stabilize. But through the first four games of data that we have, Kevin Kiermaier, Whit Merrifield, and George Springer leading the way in sprint speed for this team. So to the point that you made on last week's podcast, Blue Jays leading the league in those fast veterans. Those three guys are all at least 33, if not 34 and older. And then number four on that sprint speed leaderboard for the Blue Jays to this point, Matt Chapman is going to turn 30 later this week. So we haven't even gotten into, you know, like you said, the Biggios or the Bichettes or the younger players on this team that you would expect to be up there over time as well.
Yeah, exactly. And at this point in the season, we haven't seen a lot of reps. So if someone is not, like Bichette, for example, doesn't register very high on that yet, there's still time, obviously, for that to shift. This is small sample. But to your point about Varsho and the exit velo, if you have a small sample of really good results, that is indicative of something real. If you have a small sample that's kind of more mediocre, well, it's early. You have time to improve on that. But certainly to see Kiermaier moving as well as he is has to be really encouraging for the Jays.
Yeah, the Blue Jays wanted to run the bases more aggressively this season. They also wanted to like field a more veteran and experienced roster. Those desires would seem to be in opposition of one another. And yet, the Blue Jays seem to have found the personnel to rectify that and to do that. So it's very interesting.
It is. Yeah, gotta love those. I mean, fast guys at any age are fun. I certainly really enjoy watching Bobby Witt Jr. actually here in Kansas City this week. Just blazing speed. But the old fast guys, got to appreciate what they're doing as well.
Man, Nicky Lopez as well. Like, that guy absolutely burns around the bases. It was a really, really fun game to watch on Tuesday, just for a lot of the athleticism that you saw and a lot of what was on display. And looking forward to seeing Yusei Kikuchi's debut here on Tuesday evening, which, yeah, we haven't seen yet, and who knows how that's going to go. But looking forward to seeing that and then recapping that next week. But that's going to be all for us. Want to thank our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. Want to thank all you for listening. He's Ben, I'm Arden, and we will talk to you next time on At the Letters.